4 score and 7 years ago, so began the message of a war-weary President Abraham Lincoln.
Good morning, I'm Tommy Howe, and welcome to another edition of Tree Huggers International, recorded today at Gettysburg National Military Park in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. Tree Huggers International is a weekly natural science and environmental affairs program dedicated to the preservation of parks, wilderness, and special places, from the beaches to the mountains to the deserts. This is Tree Huggers International. Be careful. And use the show with caution, because you might just learn something. Living in the West, we tend to take national parks, maybe not for granted, but as part of the scenery. From Mount Rainier, the North Cascades and Glacier, to Yosemite, Sequoia and Kings Canyon and the Grand Canyon, we typically expect our national parks to defy superlatives and be larger than life. And while there are sizable national parks back east, like Shenandoah, Acadia, and the Great Smoky Mountains, the national battlefields and historic sites where battles of the Revolutionary War and Civil War were fought play somewhat the same role in the east as national monuments do in the west. That is, protecting resources and practicing conservation within a smaller footprint, but on a scale which still enables wildlife corridors and open space aesthetics and acts as a bulwark to encroaching urbanization. Fought over the course of 3 days in July of 1863, Gettysburg is, of course, the most famous of Civil War battles and one of the most terrible. The toll in lives over its 3 days remains impossibly grim. Upwards of 51,000 casualties on both sides, with nearly 10,000 killed. Terrible. Even for a war which had no shortage of carnage or butchery. And while the battle retains a place in history as a turning point in the war, its legacy extends beyond military history, as today's Gettysburg National Military Park preserves some 4,000 acres of the battlefield and adjoining areas, including streams, fields, meadows, orchards, and several good-sized hills for its area within the Pennsylvania-Piedmont Coastal Plain and Potomac River watershed. Well, joining us to talk more about the natural, cultural, and historical conservation work going on at Gettysburg National Military Park and the renovations made at the battlefield site over the last few years by the National Park Service and the Gettysburg Foundation, including the park's brand new LEED Certified Visitor Center, is Cinda Walbuser, the Pennsylvania Senior Program Manager with the National Parks Conservation Association. Cinda, thank you for making the drive over here from Philadelphia. Welcome to the special on-location edition of Tree Huggers International.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
I want to talk a bit about the Gettysburg Foundation, which is the private-public partnership which works in conjunction with the National Park Service. But let's start off talking about the overall renovation, if that's the right word to use, of the Gettysburg battlefield. What's been done to make the area here look more like it did in 1863?
A little more than 10 years ago, as part of their general management plan, the Park Service put into place a plan that would rehabilitate the battlefield to its 1863 appearance, with the idea that would allow visitors to better step back in time and imagine what the soldiers actually went through during their time here and the Battle of Gettysburg. That's included tree removal of non-historic trees. It's also included restoring historic orchards and trees. That tree removal has rehabilitated the battlefield to that appearance, but it's also provided meadow habitat, which is great for ground nesting species such as birds and butterflies.
Yeah, it's funny because for a show like Tree Huggers International, we usually encourage trees being saved, but understandably to preserve how the area looked on the eve of battle, some of those trees were removed, and you mentioned some orchards were restored. One of the famous landmarks in the battle was the peach orchard. There used to be a chain link fence tower here, which was built in the 1970s. It was built on private property. Pennsylvania Governor Milton Schaap at the time tried to keep it from being built, and it was always something of a thorn in the side to battlefield conservationists. And it was rather dramatically demolished in 2000. Would it be safe to say this was the beginning of a renewed move to restore the battlefield to 1863 conditions?
Yeah, that was really the first step in this whole rehabilitation process that's been going on since then. That was in 2000. That land was added to the park's boundary to make demolishing the tower possible in 1990. So it took about 10 years after that, but it came down in 2000 and certainly has done a lot to begin to rehabilitate the battlefield.
Was that one of the key things that a lot of folks who were behind the park renovation felt needed to happen first?
Yes. There was a lot of fanfare when that tower came down, and many, many people wanted to see it gone in that portion of the landscape.
Talk a little bit about the Gettysburg Foundation. Now, as I understand it, the foundation really came together in 1999. It had a leased facility for the National Park Service to rehabilitate cannon carriages. But in fact, the foundation has been around prior to that.
The foundation, I think it was 1998, is when the foundation was founded. One of the main ideas behind the foundation was that it would raise the money and build the new visitor center and museum. It also would help with the battlefield rehabilitation and also help with land preservation, artifact preservation, and other bits of cultural preservation.
Are these kinds of foundations unusual with the National Park Service? Because you tend to see this more like on a state or local level.
We kind of hold this up as a great model for a public-private partnership within the Park Service. So the foundation raised the money and built the new visitor center and museum. They also operate the facilities. So the Park Service has a state-of-the-art facilities. It's also freed up Park Service funding to be used for other things such as additional ranger programs. And so it really is a win-win for everyone.
And so the foundation actually operates like the visitor center here?
Correct.
How does the foundation go about raising money? Are there matching funds that come from the government?
No, it's all privately raised. They've raised all of the money and they aren't relying on federal funding.
The new visitor center here at Gettysburg was opened in 2008. And first of all, it's LEED certified, which makes us at Tree Huggers International happy about that. But this is really the centerpiece of what the foundation had been trying to do. There used to be a visitor center located on Cemetery Road.
One of the nice things with this opening is the old visitor center was built on a key portion of the battlefield. So the Park Service has been able to begin to rehabilitate that portion of the battlefield back to its 1863 appearance since this new facility is in place.
The foundation seems to have a lot of similar goals as the Park Service. One of the great ones is conservation of resources, whether that's finding artifacts on the battlefield, preserving a lot of the weaponry which was used at the time. There's even a collection of musical instruments from the era which is located here. The foundation also seemed to have a lot to do with the restoration of the Gettysburg Cyclorama, which was painted about 20 years after the battle. Can you talk a little bit about the cyclorama being moved to this location?
The cyclorama was in a building which actually is still standing next to the old visitor center. The building, while it has a very famous architect, was not necessarily built taking into account the southeastern Pennsylvania climate. And so therefore, there were a lot of problems with leaking and other issues with the snow and rain. So unfortunately, with that came deterioration of the painting. So along with building the new visitor center and museum, they built a special portion of the building to hold the cyclorama and display it properly. So they moved it over and had a very long restoration project where they really restored the painting back to its original grandeur.
There's been some controversy about a potential casino being built in the Gettysburg area. And of course, anytime you want to put up something like that in an area that has such cultural resources and historical resources like this, it's going to raise a lot of flags. They wanted to put a Walmart in down by the Wilderness Battlefield in Virginia, and thankfully that was defeated. But can you talk a little bit about the casino controversy here?
There have been two proposals in the last 6 years to locate a casino near the battlefield. The first one would have been located about a mile and a half from the battlefield. And that was
a little close.
And that was defeated in 2006. The Pennsylvania Gaming Control Board, which oversees the process of licensing casinos, denied that license in favor of licensing a casino elsewhere in Pennsylvania. And they stated the public opposition was really kind of one of the big factors in their decision. In 2010, the same person proposed a casino a half mile from the battlefield, which we really feel would detract from and conflict with the history of what happened here, the lives that were given in, for our country, and the family-friendly atmosphere we still enjoy in the town of Gettysburg and the battlefield. This is a place where you can walk in the footsteps of the soldiers that fought here. Kids who may not really care about the history of Gettysburg when they read about it in their textbook can come here, and many of them walk away and they understand and they care. And we just didn't feel that a casino fit with that atmosphere. And, you know, there was wide public opposition nationally to this. We had just NPCA alone had from their members and supporters over 14,000 letters of opposition. We worked with coalition partners and had over 30,000 Americans signed a petition against the casino. 275 prominent historians signed a letter opposing it. So people got it, that it wasn't the right development in this area.
Talk a little bit about the coalition NPCA helped put together. I mean, was the Park Service able to take a position on this?
The Park Service did not take a position on the casino. The coalition involved NPCA, the Civil War Trust, National Trust for Historic Preservation, and Preservation Pennsylvania. And we worked together on both of the two casino proposals to advocate against locating a casino this close to the battlefield.
So far, it looks as though the casino's been held off for the moment. Do you foresee a time when this might be proposed again?
We are hoping to do all we can to ensure another one won't be proposed. There's currently a bill pending in the Pennsylvania State Legislature, which would put a 10-mile buffer around the battlefield and not allow a casino to be licensed within 10 miles of the battlefield. We're going to do all we can to make sure that passes so that we don't face the same thing in the future.
So that would just apply to casinos?
It would apply to casinos, and it would apply to national military parks.
All right. And, of course, you've got Gettysburg National Cemetery here as well, which is a historic place. This is where Lincoln delivered the Gettysburg Address in November of 1863. Obviously, you want to keep in the spirit of the locale.
Right. Actually, there's right now a bill that has been introduced by Congressman Platts that would expand the boundary. You mentioned the Gettysburg Address, would expand the boundary to include the Lincoln train station, which is in downtown Gettysburg and is where Lincoln arrived to give his Gettysburg Address. So there's lots of moves to continue to preserve and interpret the important history that happened here. So we certainly don't want to step back by having incompatible developments such as a casino.
The Gettysburg Foundation has also been instrumental in the acquisition of some additional property in the Gettysburg area. Is that going to be added to the park?
The wonderful thing about this partnership is truly both partners, their interest is preserving the land that tells the story of the Battle of Gettysburg. The foundation has purchased a number of properties, historically important properties, within the boundary and also outside of the boundary of the park to ensure that they're preserved.
If you're just joining us, this is Tree Huggers International, recorded today on location at Gettysburg National Military Park in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. I'm Tommy Howe, and we're joined by Cinda Walbuser, the Pennsylvania Senior Program Manager with the National Parks Conservation Association. We're talking about renovations made to the Gettysburg Battlefield by not only the National Park Service, but also the Gettysburg Foundation. There's more information about the Gettysburg Foundation at GettysburgFoundation.org. That's GettysburgFoundation.org. You can also go to the National Park Service website for the Gettysburg National Military Park. That is www.nps.gov/GETT for Gettysburg. nps.gov/GETT. And the website for the National Parks Conservation Association is www.npca.org. That's npca.org. And of course, we've worked with the National Parks Conservation Association on several editions of Tree Huggers International. Cinda, the Gettysburg area remains rural, though development has been encroaching onto the battlefield, especially just beyond the high water mark and the site of General Meade's headquarters, which we mentioned earlier. But the park retains some rather wild, wooded areas despite this, especially along Warfield Ridge and the shoulder of Big Round Top. Can you talk about some of the wildness, if that's the right word, this area retains by virtue of the park being here?
I think the wonderful thing about Gettysburg, and really one of our big arguments against something like a casino so close to the park, is that the area does still maintain that rural atmosphere. There are lots of farms near the park. The town of Gettysburg still maintains kind of the charm of a small town. You can really imagine what it would have been like in 1863. That isn't necessarily the case in many of the national parks in this portion of the country. Many are Greenpeace and a sea of urban and suburban development.
An island of conservation. Yes.
Yes,
indeed. Would Valley Forge be a good example of that, like this island of conservation?
Absolutely. Valley Forge is completely surrounded by suburban development. One of the largest malls in the country is right down the road. The park is a wonderful historical park and piece of our culture, but it's also for residents of the area, their piece of green and their place for recreation. As it is, it's just completely surrounded by development.
Well, and a number of battlefield sites are retaining open space and wildlife corridors in some growing urbanized areas like the Atlanta metro area, around Nashville, the I-95 corridor between D.C. and Richmond. And it would be safe to say, I think, Gettysburg, in comparison to those areas, I mean, southeastern Pennsylvania has seen a lot of growth over the last 20 years, but the Gettysburg area still does seem to be kind of rural. I think Antietam is another good example of perhaps a rural battlefield area. Generally speaking, Pennsylvania is not really thought of as a major national park state, which is a shame because there are some lovely areas in this state. But typically they tend to be historic sites like Gettysburg, like Valley Forge. Can you talk about some of the parks that's in your portfolio with the NPCA here?
Most of them are historical. However, we have Delaware Water Gap National Recreation Area, which is actually the eighth or ninth most visited national park unit, which is shocking to most people. But it's a very short drive from New York City and Philadelphia. So it draws from, you know, major, major population centers. It's got 5.3 million visitors a year and has one of the cleanest rivers in the country that runs through it and provides just tremendous recreational opportunities for city populations that probably otherwise wouldn't get into green spaces like that.
Now, this is north of Philadelphia.
Correct.
And this is, and the Delaware River is the border of New Jersey and Pennsylvania.
Correct. Delaware Water Gap, half of it is in Pennsylvania and half of it's in New Jersey with the river in between. We, of course, have Independence National Historical Park and Valley Forge, as you mentioned. Up towards Pittsburgh, there's Fort Necessity and Johnstown Flood. So we have a wide, wide range of cultural units.
So how does your mission with the NPCA differ from someone, say, in the West who's handling or has in their portfolio some of these big national parks that I was mentioning earlier?
I've done a lot of work with issues that are related to development pressures. One of the big campaigns was at Valley Forge, and it was a proposal to develop 78 acres of historically important land that was within the boundary but privately owned. And that was a three-year battle to ensure that that land was protected. And it is. It's now in national park ownership. But it was zoned to be completely developed.
Developed as...
It was going to be a conference center, hotel, museum, and then it also had zoned for restaurants and other types of development.
So even though this was a parcel of private property within the NPS unit, the zoning laws still enabled it to be zoned for that use?
Correct. Park Service boundaries are drawn with kind of ideals of what they would like to have as their property. And in many national park units, there are little pieces or large pieces that are still privately owned. And if they're privately owned, they still fall to local zoning. And, you know, there are some of the Western parks that do actually have pieces of land that are not owned by the Park Service. Hmm. It's a huge issue. And I think it's worse here because development pressures are just pushing up against park units. There are proposals for houses. There was one in Valley Forge for a housing complex on a privately owned parcel within the park boundary. And who wouldn't want to live in the middle of a national park?
Who wouldn't want that? Yeah, it'd be quiet. It's green. We'll talk a little bit about some of the adjoining sites here, which the National Park Service oversees. I mean, you've got the Eisenhower National Historic Site, where you can still see the herd of Eisenhower's Black Angus. Someone's kept these things alive for 40 years. And Gettysburg National Cemetery, which we sort of talked about, is pretty much a component of the battlefield.
Yeah, I really see the cemetery as part of the battlefield in terms of its proximity and telling the same story. Eisenhower's house is a great unit. You really feel like they still live there when you walk in. And you kind of get their story, and you also get a piece of that era's history by seeing how the house is decorated. And you really could just imagine them walking in into the kitchen while you're in there.
What are some current initiatives right now with the Gettysburg Foundation, and where's the Park Service and the NPCA looking to go with this property?
I think it's important to close all of the pieces of privately owned land within the park, because there still are parcels of land that the Park Service doesn't own. The expansion I mentioned, which would include the Gettysburg train station, or the Lincoln train station, as many refer to it, in the park boundary, that would be a really great thing that we're hoping will happen, hopefully, this Congress. It's currently owned by the borough of Gettysburg, so they're willing, ready to sell it to the Park Service once it's in their boundary.
I hate to use the word eager or cooperative in terms of the residents of Gettysburg, but have you and your work tended to find people who live near these national park sites that are somewhat smaller, perhaps more urbanized, like Valley Forge? How eager are they to work with entities like the NPCA or a foundation like the Gettysburg Foundation in order to make these things happen for the betterment of these Park Service properties?
It depends on the issue. One example is the casino issue was very divisive locally. And it was divisive between those who really saw the harm it could do to the historical fabric of the area, and between those that saw that it might provide more jobs, and listened to the proponents of the casino saying that there would be a lot more jobs. At Valley Forge, it's kind of the same thing. After the issue I was talking about recently about the proposed development within the park, we have a really strong group of allies there who recognize the importance of that unit and recognize that if they don't act, it's not going to always be there. And that's the same here, certainly, with the allies from the casino. Allies are very strong and very concerned about the future of the park. I love that I am helping to preserve these iconic places for my kids and grandkids to enjoy. I love knowing that anytime I have a really long, sometimes unpleasant campaign to stop some form of development, I love knowing that when it's over, I can point to something and say, that's there and there the way it is because of all that work I put into it. And I don't think there are many jobs out there that allow you to feel that way.
You live in the Philadelphia area, so Gettysburg is not exactly next door, but it is part of your portfolio, as you mentioned. When you and your husband get a chance to walk around here, where do you like to go?
Oh, being anywhere on the battlefield and just kind of taking a time, especially if you can be here when it's not too crowded, and taking a little bit of time just to reflect on what happened, I think it's all so very powerful.
When it comes to different Park Service properties back east, as we like to say on the West Coast, where do you enjoy going?
Well, Independence has a special place in my heart because I grew up in Philadelphia and spent a lot of time as a child showing any visitor that came into town. My mom liked to show them Independence. So that has a really special place in my heart because of that. Likewise, Valley Forge being very close to where I live right now and a wonderful piece of green and a wonderful historical unit also has a special place. But you can't pick. They all have, and Delaware Water Gap is just such a beautiful natural environment, so near two major cities. They're all great.
You used to work on Capitol Hill. When letters are written to senators or congressmen and the staffs are reading these, how important is a letter versus a phone call or an email?
I think a personal letter is the most valuable form of correspondence, though things are slow getting to the Hill now with security and getting in people's hands. So I also think that emails, personal emails with personal stories and telling why it's important to you are very important.
Would it be safe to say that, I mean, the squeaky wheel gets oiled, we all know that, but would it be safe to say that if you're not writing letters and making a fuss, some politicians simply aren't going to be aware that this is an issue? Now, you need to make it the issue.
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. They have so much to focus on unless they hear from their constituents that it's a concern and a problem. They may not fully understand the issue. And who couldn't love being able to say that you at least had a piece of preserving all of these national park units?
And I think that applies no matter where in the country
I absolutely think it does. They're all an important piece of who we are as Americans.
Cinda Walbuser, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate you making the drive from Downingtown to come to Gettysburg, and very nice to meet with you. And thank you very much for your time and also your work and advocacy on behalf of America's national parks.
Great to be here, and thanks for coming to Gettysburg.
That's going to wrap things up for this week's edition of Tree Huggers International, recorded on location at Gettysburg National Military Park in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. I'm Tommy Howe. We are joined by Cinda Walbuser, the Pennsylvania Senior Program Manager with the National Parks Conservation Association. Again, a thanks to Cinda for making the drive from the Downingtown area of Philadelphia to be with us in Gettysburg to record this show. For more information on Gettysburg National Military Park and Battlefield, go to www.nps.gov/GETT. That's nps.gov/GETT. You can find more on the Gettysburg Foundation at gettysburgfoundation.org. www.gettysburgfoundation.org. And the website for the National Parks Conservation Association is npca.org. npca.org. In addition to our thanks to Cinda Walbuser, we also want to extend our gracious thanks to the staff and volunteers at the Gettysburg National Military Park Visitor Center. Thank you for your time, effort, and accommodations. We appreciate it. Also, a special thanks to Perry Wheeler in the Washington, D.C. office of the National Parks Conservation Association for his help making this show come together. The opinions and views expressed on Tree Huggers International do not necessarily represent the opinions and views of the staff or management of this radio station, and as producer, I am solely responsible for this program's content. For more information on Tree Huggers International and to hear previous editions of the show, go to the Tree Huggers International website at treehuggersintl.com. That's www.treehuggersintl.com. You can also find Tree Huggers International on social media outlets, including Facebook and Twitter. And the Tree Huggers International Twitter account is at treehuggersintl. Tree Huggers International content can also be found on iTunes. This is Tommy Howe for Tree Huggers International. We'll be back with another take on natural science and environmental affairs as we continue our mission to preserve parks, wilderness, and special places on Tree Huggers International. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, and be well.